Today's daf is Kuf Chavchet. We're going to start, we'll just review from the two dots. Nishchita Be'ema, at the bottom of Kuf Chavzayin Amabet. So we saw in the Mishnah, remember there was a case of an Eiver or Basar, there's a limb or flesh that's dangling from the animal, right, which we generally call Eiver Menachai. You can't eat it, therefore it's not Matame Tumat Ochlin. But if you say, oh, I'm going to feed it to a non-Jew, even though non-Jews also can't eat it, but since they do eat it, befall, so if you're, it would be Matame Tumat Ochlin. If they're, right, even when they're still attached. But they need Hechsher, right? They need to be Mukhshar the Kabel Tum'ah. Once you shech the animal, Nishchita Be'ema, we're now going to see six ways of reading the machloket, understanding it, what the debate is between them. Okay, now, it's going to break up into three and three. The first three are going to be in the category of the ones we saw yesterday, which is that there's the animal, right? There's the animal, and then there's the piece dangling. So now, the question is, did the dam hashchita, was it machshir lekabel tuma, the aver, or not? Now, the assumption of the first three opinions is going to be that we're talking about blood fell on the animal. Do we assume that the blood that got on the animal, even though it didn't actually touch the part that's dangling, is that enough to be machshir? Do we view those as connected? So the first thing we saw was Rabba. Rabba said, the machloket is behema, is the behema naaseh yad la'eder, right? Do we view the animal as a handle to what's dangling? Because you could actually hold the animal, and with that you would be holding the Eiver. Do we say that? Or do we not say, the reason to say not is that it doesn't really, you wouldn't say that's a handle for the yad, for the Eiver. It's not exactly the way you would say things. That's one option. So if it's a yad, if it's not say Eiver, then what did we learn? Now we learned that there was a machloket about this, and we're going to get to that in a minute. Learned a while ago that there's a machloket about if the yad is hukshar, does that mean what the yad is attached to is hukshar? So this assumes that you would say, as soon as you say it's a yad, then if the blood falls on the animal, then it will be machshir the limb, okay, or the meat that's dangling. Okay, the assumption is a yad can, right, if something's attached to its own handle and the handle gets wet, it's as if the item itself got wet. That's one option. The second option was Abaye. Ochez katan ve'ein gadol olei mo kamiflege. Right? Abaye says, you're holding something small, and ein hagadol, let's start with the reverse. Okay? If you held the animal, the aver would be attached to it. So they would be viewed as one unit. But since if you would hold the katan, you wouldn't be able to carry the whole animal by holding that little aver or basar that's hanging off. Therefore, would we say, if you're ochez katan ve'en gadol oleimo, would we say they're not viewed as one and the same since you can't hold it from this side? If you can hold it from this side, you get them both. But if you hold it from this side, you won't be able to hold them both. So maybe they're not considered attached, in which case, lo hukshar, that would be Rabbi Shimon. Or do we say they are attached, okay? Since you can hold the gadol and you'll be able to hold the katan, we don't care if you held the katan and not the gadol, we still view them as one. So that was Abaye. So now we say, Afrabi Yochanan Savar, Savar ba'ochez ba'katan ve'en gadol oleim o'kam b'flugay. Even Rabbi Yochanan agrees with Abaye. How do we know this? Now we're going to learn a whole thing about Rabbi Yochanan. From there we're going to see whether we can say that this is the case. To Rabbi Yochanan Rami, to Rabbi Meir, to Rabbi Meir. Rabbi Yochanan said, Rabbi Meir contradicts himself. Okay, there's a contradiction between Rabbi Meir in one place, Rabbi Meir in another place. Mi amar Rabbi Meir, ochez bekatan ve'en gadol oleimo? Does Rabbi Meir really hold that ochez bekatan ve'en gadol oleimo, harehu kamohu, which is exactly what we said in our case, because what does he say? It is hukshiru b'dameha, which means that he's viewing Rabbi Meir's opinion as that's his opinion, which would then prove that he holds like Abaye, that that's the root of the machloket. Does he really hold that? Uriminu, that contradicts a Mishnah in Tvul Yom. Tvul Yom is someone who went to the mikveh in the morning, has to wait for the sunset. He's sort of an in-between. It's like a light form of tumah because you already went to the mikveh, but you're not really fully tahor. So, if you're Tvul Yom, you have ochel shenifras, u'meureh b'mitzah. You have truma that broke up into pieces, but the pieces are still somewhat attached to each other. What happens? The Tvul Yom touches a part of it. Is the whole thing Tameh? These viewed as one unit. Same issue. So, Rabbi Meir Omer, Im ochez bekatan begadol aleimo harehu kamo. If you held a small piece and that would hold all the other pieces, you'd be able to carry all the other pieces by holding onto the small piece, then harehu kamo, and the whole thing would become tameh. Vim lav, but if you held the katan and you wouldn't be able to hold the gadol, like in our case, what would you say? Eino kamohu, you can't view these as one. Ah, that seems the exact opposite of what Rabbi Meir said. In order to resolve this contradiction, Amar Rabbi Yochanan, Mukhlefet Hashita, which means what? Right, generally, how do we explain Mukhlefet Hashita? That Mishnah there, where it said Rabbi Meir says this, and it actually says Rabbi Yehuda says the other opinion, are flipped. Okay? Flip the shitot. It would have been nicer if it was Rabbi Shimon, right? But it's not Rabbi Shimon there. Flip the shitot. Really, Rabbi Meir says the opposite shita. Okay? That's generally how we would explain this. Okay? Which means that's how we resolve this contradiction. Again, that shows that he holds that that's the issue here because he understood from that. Okay. But what's the problem? The problem is Rashi. Rashi understands Mukhlefet HaShita. Kan hichlif Rabbi Meir shitato. Aval ba'alma svirale ochez bekatan ve'en gadol aleimo harehu kamo. Rashi understands Mukhlefet HaShita is not flip the two shitot. It means in this case of Tful Yom, Rabbi Meir switched his position, specifically in that case, but otherwise he holds otherwise. And then you'd have to explain why, but it's a totally different explanation of Mukhlefet HaShita, and it's particularly strange because if you look in the Mishnah in Tful Yom, Rabbi Meir and Rabbi Yehuda appear flipped. In other words, the conclusion of Mukhlefet HaShita is the nusach of our Mishnah. It says, Rabbi Yehuda Omer Mochez B'Katam B'Gadol Aleim O'Rei U'Kamo. So, by the way, it never says Im Lav Eino Kamo, but that's just inferred from it. But the assumption is, right, that in the way whoever printed the Mishnah anyway, maybe printed it, I don't know how the nusach got changed, but the nusach is basic, or maybe they had a flip nusach and, you know. Anyway, so the nusach matches the conclusion of this contradiction.
So the idea is that Rabbi Meir doesn't come.
So the Rabbi Meir is, in other words, once we flip the shitot, there's no contradiction. And he across the board holds, katan uchez gadol, harehu kamo, which matches our Mishnah, which then again shows, this whole thing shows, that according to Rabbi Yochanan, the machloket is about katan ve'en gadol, right? Uchez b'katan v'gadol oleim o kamiflike, right? Or, en gadol oleim o kamiflike. Now they just ask about Rabbi Yochanan, though. Oh, my kushya, why did you even raise a contradiction here? There's a very simple answer to this question. Dilma shani le Rabbi Meir bein tful yom l'shar tumot. Tful yom is a light tuma, so maybe in a light tuma you'd say it's eno kamo and you can't pass on tuma because the tuma is so light it's going to not be passed on. But in a tuma chamura, like in our case, it would be passed on. So maybe the whole, right, this thing about if you hold the katan and the gadol, en gadol oleimo, harehu kamo anyway, is only in a tuma chamura, but not in a tuma kala, like that. So why wouldn't you say that? So they say, because Tanya, Rebbe Yomer, echad tful yom ve'echad char tumot. Rebbe says, there's a bright about this, says, Rebbe says, tful yom and char tumot are the same for this issue. Well, just because Rebbe says it doesn't mean Rabbi Meir says it. So Dilma, the Rebbe lo shanilei, the Rabbi Meir shanilei. You still can say Rabbi Meir doesn't contradict himself because Rabbi Meir himself thought to distinguish. Just because Rebbe didn't distinguish doesn't mean that, which again means, why does Rabbi Yochanan even raise a contradiction? So Amar Rabbi Yoshaya, hachi Amar Rabbi Yochanan. L'divrei Rebbe mukhlefet hashita. According to Rebbe's understanding of the machloket, you would have to say that the opinions have to be flipped. Remember, Rebbe came after Rabbi Meir. So Rebbe was mityaches to Rabbi Meir, and you'd have to say that according to him, you'd have to flip the shitot, because Rebbe himself thinks there's no distinction between Tuvul Yom and Shar Tumot, and therefore Rabbi Yochanan's contradiction stands. And that's according to his view. It could be there really is no contradiction, but not according to his view. Not according to Rebbe's view. Okay, that was all an aside to Abai's opinion. We still have four more ways of understanding the machloket. Rava Amar, b'yesh yad l'tuma v'ein yad l'hechsher kamiflege. Mar savar yesh yad l'tuma v'ein yad l'hechsher, mar savar yesh yad l'tuma u'lehechsher. When we talked about din yad, we said yad means you can be mavir tuma, something touches the yad, and there, right, there's a bone, and there's meat at the end of that bone, right? Something touches the bone, it'll pass on tuma to the meat, right? A bone that's an inedible bone without meat on it. Right, with meat just on the other end. So now, but yesh al tuma, everyone agrees, but the question is, as I said before, does a yad function for huchshar lekabel tuma purposes? Right, is hechsher exactly the same as tuma, and whatever criteria there are for tuma will be for hechsher, or is hechsher some outside thing that has to be there, but you know, an item has to get wet in order to get tumah. How you get tumah could be different. You could get tumah through a yad, you get tumah through a shomer, but you can't get hechsher through a yad. That doesn't work, meaning the limb would actually have to get wet itself, which means the Rabbi Shimon, who says lo hechsher, since the limb has to get wet itself, the animal can't function as a yad for hechsher. Could function as a yad for tumah, but not for hechsher. Whereas Rabbi Meir says no, yesh yad lehechsher, meaning if the animal gets wet, then it's as if the limb got wet. Okay, and that's the root of the machlokin. Okay, so according to Rava, it's yesh yad or ein yad lehechsher is the machlokin. So like I said, the first three are all assuming just the animal got wet and not the limb, right? The animal got full of the blood, but not the limb. The next three are going to talk about where the limb actually got blood on it. Okay, now we're going to see. Rav Papa Amar, behechsher kodem machshava kam biflege. The machloket is, what if the item, now, what did we say here? This is an inedible item, this aver, because it's aver minachai or basar minachai, which can't be eaten by anybody. But what happened? You said, I'm going to give this to a non-Jew, you thought in your head, which meant you turned it into food. So once you had that machshava, then it's mekabel tumah. But what if you had that machshava after a liquid came in contact with the limb? Here, it could be the blood. It doesn't have to be the blood. First, it got liquid on it. Then, when it was inedible and it wasn't a food item, then you said, oh, I want to give this to someone to eat, and you turned it into food. Does that hechsher work? Because at that point, you weren't considering it a food. Or does it not? That's called hechsher korem machshava. The liquid came in contact with it before you thought to eat. And that's the machloket. So according to Rabbi Meir again, it's fine. According to Rabbi Shimon, it's not, and you have to has to have come in contact afterwards. How do we have a source that there is such a machloket about this? Not between the same people, but we'll see. Titanya, should be Titanya, not Titanan, it's a braita, not a Mishnah. Amar Rabbi Yehuda, kachaya Rabbi Akiva shone. Rabbi Yehuda says, Rabbi Akiva was teaching the following halacha. Cherev shchuta bekvarim, Sarich machshava ve'ein sarich hechsher shekvar hukshar v'shchita. I have a kosher animal. Someone shechted it. Now there's chelev, forbidden fats, on that. Now forbidden fats are not edible, and we don't eat them, right? But they're also not edible. Nobody really eats fat. So you have chelev from a shechted animal. Now that animal was hukshar l'kabel tumah during the shchita process, except that the chelev wasn't edible. Okay. Now the question is, is chelev really inedible or not? So, it depends where you live. If you live in a kfar, in a small village, chelev is inedible. People don't eat it, it means. If you live in a big city, people eat chelev. Now, why is there a difference? So, I'll give you two interpretations that I've brought. What are the issues? That Rashi says, in the kfar, there's very few people, which means that there's enough meat to go around because there's no fight over the meat. There's not that many people. You could say the reverse, right? There's not as much meat. But okay, let's just assume there's enough meat to go around. In a big city, there's so many people who are vying for meat that there's not enough meat to go around. And therefore, they'll eat the chelev because they're kind of more desperate for food. Okay? Whereas in the kfar, nobody eats that because there's enough meat to go around. I think the second, yeah, Rashi brings another interpretation, which is that in the kfar, they're more poor. If they're more poor, what's the issue? The chelev, in order to eat it, requires work and time investment, or maybe money investment, finding someone who knows how to deal with it and make it edible. I don't know exactly what the process is, but this is a theory. Whereas if you're rich, you can afford to do that, so you'll eat the chelev. But if you're poor, you can't afford to do that, and therefore you're not going to eat the chelev. Okay, but neither interpretation is super strong, which is why there's two, right? Anyway, okay. But for whatever reason, in the kfar, it wouldn't be food. So, tsarich machshava, you need to say, if you really are going to eat it, you think, I'm going to eat it, at that point it won't be mitami tumat ochlin. But ain't tsarich hechsher. At that point, and immediately, as soon as I think, I want to eat this chelev, it immediately becomes mukhshar, potentially, it could be tameh. Why? Shekvar mukhshar b'shchita. Because already the shchita, right, it's like shchita kodem machshava, right? Hechsher kodem machshava. So Rabbi Akiva thinks hechsher kodem machshava works. Amarti lefanav, limadatani rabbeinu, you taught us though, another, right? So Rabbi Yehuda says, when Rabbi Akiva taught this, I said to him, but wait, didn't you teach us the following? Olshin, shelektan. Okay, these are endives. They seem to be, no, maybe people didn't eat endives. Okay, or it's some sort of endives that people don't eat. Shelaktan, you gather them together. Vihidichan lebeima. Generally, people gave them to their animals to eat. So you gather them together, you rinse them off for use for your animal. That's not matame tumat ochlin, because it's for an animal, that's not considered food. Vinim lach alehen la'adam. But then you changed your mind and you said, oh, I want to eat it. Either me or give it to my family or somebody. Trichot hechsher sheni. Ah, what do you see? Even though you rinse them for the animal, that hechsher didn't work. You need to have another hechsher. V'chazar Rabbi Akiva liyotshoneke Rabbi Yehuda. Rabbi Akiva said, oh, you're right. I'm going to change my mind. Mar savar le kimeikara, umar savar le kechazara. Now go back to our machloket. Nishchita beima achshuru b'dameha. Do we say that the dam that hit, again, this is where the dam actually hits the limb directly, the dam that hit the limb during shchita was machshir, even though we weren't planning to eat it at that point? Or does it not work, and does it need a new hechsher once I decided I'm actually going to eat this aver, I'm going to give it to someone to eat, then does it need its own separate hechsher? Okay, that was option number four. Okay, option number four, let's just put it on the board. Rav Papa, hechsher kodem machshava. Ran out of room on the board. Write it down. Okay. For fifth answer, Rav Acha b'Reid Rav Ika Amar b'Nitkaneh Chadan Ben Siman l'Siman Kamiflege. The machloket is about you started shechting the animal. The blood spurted out after the first siman. All the blood comes out before you shechted the next siman. The blood got washed off. You know, you kind of maybe someone came and wiped it off. Okay. So now when you finish the shechita of the second siman, there's no blood anymore. So now what's the machloket? Mar savar yeshna l'shechita mitchila ad sof. Sound familiar? We've learned this a number of times. It's all considered shechita from the beginning of when you start shechting the first siman through to the end, which means what? Hai dam shechita. Now if you remember, only dam shechita is machshir l'kabel tumah, but not dam that comes from a makah. If I start bleeding, you know, I get a cut and I start bleeding, that's not dam that's machshir l'kabel tumah. Because we saw, remember, the dam ala aretz yishpachenu kamayim, and right, there's different ways, and dam chalalim, there's different ways of learning which type of dam is actually mukhshar lekabel tuma. So now, what do they say? So if yesh na l'shchita mitchila bad sof, so the dam that went on it originally and then dried off, we don't care that it was dried off, because it was dam shchita. Umar savar eina l'shchita ela l'sof, but if you say that the shchita is only at the last moment when you get through the rove of the second siman, Hai dam makahu. Any dam that came before was dam of a makah. Only dam that comes out at the very end is dam shchita, and there was no dam shchita at this point. And therefore, if the dam was there and it dried off and it's no longer there, and right now there's no more blood coming out, so that blood doesn't count, and you need a new hechsher. Rav Ashi amar b'shchita machsheret v'lo dam kamiflegei. This goes back to, if you remember, we saw there was an opinion that said the shchita itself is machshir. You don't need the dam. It's the shchita that's machshir. Now you'd have to change the words a little, because what did it say in the Mishnah? Shchita b'ema huchshiru b'dameha. What it really means, huchshiru b'shchitata. Because what did we say? Huchshar l'kabel tumah is really for zera, for plants and, you know, fruits and vegetables, which need water in order. You always wash them to get the dirt off, to make them ra'oy l'achila. That's what's called gemar melacha, like finishing by an animal, it's shchita. That's the counterpart. It doesn't mean you need a liquid on it. It means the shchita itself is gemar melacha. So if that's the case, what will happen, right? If you say shchita is machsheret, then huchsheru b'dameh, basically meaning huchsheru b'shchita ta'akri t'rabi meh. If you say shchita is not machsheret, you need a liquid to come upon it, then the case would be that the limb actually didn't get any liquid on it. The dam got on the animal, but here, we don't think that the blood getting on the animal is going to be machshir the limb. Nothing got on the limb, so Rabbi Shimon says, well, you need liquid on it, right? Whereas Rabbi Meir says, you don't need liquid. The shchita itself is gemar malacha. No liquid's needed in this case. Okay, those are the six ways of understanding the machloket. Now we're going to have a slew of questions, okay? Which all are of the same genre. By Rabbi, behema b'chayeha, Mao shetease yad la'ever. A behema that's alive can't be mitame tumat ochlin. We've already said that. The behema can only be mitame once it's dead, and then it'll be tumat ochlin or it'll be tumat nevela if it died, right? But a live animal, we say, can never carry tumah. But just like we took the case where there was an etzem, and at the end of that etzem, remember, an etzem also isn't food, a bone. You have a bone. At the end of that bone is meat. If tumah comes in contact with the bone, it transfers it to the meat. Could you say the same thing by the animal? That the animal is a yad for the limb, which means that if the animal became tamei, then that tumah would transfer to the limb. Okay? Right? Because this was all, the whole question was, could this potentially become tamei? Now we're talking about, could it actually become tamei by, right? Tumah, a sheret, touches the animal, then would that pass on tumah to the limb, even though the animal itself is alive and can't become tamei, but could it pass on tumah, midin yad? So the question is, since an animal can't really ever become tamei while it's alive, is it able to be used as a conduit or not? Take, okay? We don't know the answer. Amar Abaye, Harambru, kishut shenita'a ba'atzitz vehigdila v'yatza chutz la'atzitz tehora. If you have a cucumber or something from the zucchini family that you plant in a pot, like a flower pot, which is not attached to the ground, doesn't have a hole in it, so now that's considered talush. If something's talush, it's food. As soon as the cucumber grows, that's food. It can become tamei. But higdila v'yatza chutz la'atzitz. But it grew out, and as you know, things grow out and they grow to the sides, and now it's hanging over the ground. At that point, what's happening? It's not only getting its sustenance from the atzitz that's not attached to the ground, it's also getting sustenance from the ground below it, that's going through the air. So, what do we say? It's tehora. Since the outside part is getting from the karka, that means it's considered mechubar. This is crazy halacha, even though it's not attached to the ground at all.
There's no real sustenance besides sun.
Right. So they claim that there's sustenance coming from the ground that's going into that cucumber, and therefore it's going to be not able to be makabel tumah because it's considered attached. Amar Rabbi Shimon b'chima tiba l'taher, ela hatameh b'tumato b'tor b'tarato. How can the part that's hanging outside be mitaher the part that's inside? No way. The part that's inside the pot is tameh, tumat ochlin. The part that's outside the pot, that's actually getting sustenance from outside the pot, from the ground, that's going to be tahor. But you can't, right? We're going to have two parts of it. Now that we have two parts, baya baye, mao shetaseh yad l'chaverta. Just like the animal couldn't become tameh, but we said could be used as a yad. Likewise, could this cucumber that's hanging over, if a sheretz touches it, even though it itself can't become tahor, since it's attached to the part that's in the pot, according to Rabbi Shimon, the part of the pot is tameh, therefore, could it bring, or it's potentially could be tameh, could this bring tumah into the part that's in the pot? And again, teku. I'm a Rabbi Yirmiyah. Again, not surprising he's here. Hare amru hamishtachave. Okay, maybe he comes with the most absurd case. Hare amru hamishtachave lechatzi dlat asara. Okay, if I say I'm going to bow down to half of a gourd, okay? Meaning, right, I have a gourd here. Here's two halves of it, right? It's one whole piece. I say I'm worshiping this half of the gourd. Okay, that's why it's a bit of an absurd case, right? Who would worship a gourd? But okay, I'm going to worship half of this. This half of the gourd is now forbidden b'hana'a, because it's avodah zarah. If it's forbidden b'hana'a, it can't be eaten. If it can't be eaten, it can't be mitame tumat ochlin. By Rabbi Yirmiya, ma'u shetaseh yad l'chaverta. Only that half is forbidden b'hana'a. The other half is not forbidden b'hana'a. So if this half, something tame touches the half that's forbidden, which means it's not mitame tumat ochlin, but could it transfer tumah to the other side that it's attached to? Take again, take. Amar Papa, Haramru. Another question. Yichur shel teina shenifshach. We have a branch of a fig tree that breaks off, but it's meurebikli pata, but it's still attached to the bark. Rabbi Yehuda mitaher. Rabbi Yehuda says this is still considered attached. Chachamim omrim, it depends. Im yachol lechiot, if it can survive in the tree and it won't dry out, it's attached enough that it'll live by the tree. Tahor, it's not makabel tumah. Vim lav, tameh. But if not, then it's going to be tameh. So either which way, both of them hold that there's a case where it's going to be tahor, where depending on if it can live or not, or maybe it doesn't depend, as long as it's somewhat attached to the bark, it's considered attached. By Rav Papa now asks, though, ma'u shiaseh yad l'chavero? But let's say, attached to this branch, okay, we have a branch attached to a tree, it's kind of, you know, not fully attached, but it's still enough attached that it's going to live, according to Chachamim. Attached to that is another branch. Now this other branch is a tameh. Now this, what did we say? This one's tahor. It can't become tameh because it's considered mechubar. Remember, anything that's attached to the ground can't become tameh. It's only once detached. But now what happens? It's got another branch attached to it. But the branch that, I can't draw this exactly, but the branch that's attached to it is not going to survive on its own. Now, that means that the branch that's attached to that branch, right? We have a trunk, a branch, and another branch. The far branch, right, that's farthest away from the bark, is not attached enough to that other branch to allow it to survive, which means this can be makabel tuma, right? It potentially could be tameh. Now, so how does it become tameh, right? A sheretz touches it. But what if a sheretz touches the tahor branch? Could that be considered a yad to the branch that's very vaguely attached to it? And in which case it would transfer tumah. In other words, right, remember, this is the exact same case we keep talking about, where the item itself can't become tameh, but maybe it can transfer tumah to an item that could become tameh that's attached to it. Okay. Again, we're not going to have any answers to these. Teiku. Okay, last case. Now we're going to get to a bayit menuga. You have a bayit that has a nega, right? There's a whole process you go through. I'm not going to get into all the details, right? The kohen comes and waits 7 days. They wait again, right? There's different processes. What happens if things keep going sour and it doesn't get any better? So the first thing you have to do is you have to take out, like, you have a basically the issue is you have a stone that has tzarat on it. You have to remove that stone. But if things continue to go bad, you have to actually destroy your entire house, like take out all the stones in your house. So now, let's say we have a house. Okay, here's our house, my house and your house, and there's a wall in between. Now, there's one, I have a wall and you have a wall. So I have a stone wall, you have a stone wall. But the way they would build their houses was that the walls on either side, this could be anywhere of the wall, but let's just assume, now this Gemara is going to talk about what they call Even Shebizavit. Okay, it could be that you have a stone like that in the middle of the wall also, but it was more normal, more natural that they would have these at the sides. In order to strengthen the wall, they would put one stone that went all the way through. It was like the width, the length of two stones, right? Because each one has a stone wall, each stone has stones with, and then this one was covered the whole area between my house and my wall and your wall. So what if that stone that's, you can see from both houses, basically, it's in my house, it's in your house, has a tzara'at on one side of it, okay? So that's the case we're talking about, where it's only, let's say, on my house, not yours, okay? But the stone does go all the way to your house. So Amar Rabbi Zera, Haramru, they say about this stone, Evan Shebizavit, there's two things that happen. The first stage is cholet, that you have to take out the stone that has the nega, and the next stage after that, if things still go bad, then you have to be lintotza tabayit. So, even shebizavit, kishu cholet, cholet zekula. When you remove it, right, if you have to remove it, you have to remove the whole thing. You can't just take half of it, right, the half that has the nega in it. It sounds like the dlad, right, where there's a half that's problematic, half that's not. Ukishu notetz, but when it comes to the stage of destroying the house, notetz et shalom, enyechet shal chavero. Only my house has to be destroyed because the nega was on my side. Your house doesn't need to be destroyed. But now, here comes Rabbi Zera's question. By Rabbi Zera, Mao shetase yad lechaverta. A bayit menuga contracts toma like ohel. In other words, it's mitame things like ohel. So the question is, like, if you have a rock that has a neg on it, a stone, and it's in your house, it will be mitame everything in your house. So what if, do we say that since the stone on my side has the nega, and it's part, your side doesn't have it, but it's attached to that stone, does your stone function as a yad to take tumah from the other side of the nega and bring the tumah into your house? Just like that case where we said we had the etzem that was in your house, the meat was outside your house, and we said that the bone in your house brings the tumah from the flesh into your house. So likewise, same question here, and the answer is teiku. The Ramban actually understands the question differently, but I'll leave that aside for right now, just so you should know. It's not 100% clear what the question is here. Meita habema. We're now back to the Mishnah. We talked about this whole thing was all about nishchita habema, and hukhshuru b'dameh or not, six interpretations of what the machloket is. Now we get to the next case. If the behema dies, right, we had this aver hanging off, then the animal, so it was an aver menachai or basar menachai, then the animal dies. So what do we say? Remember we said mita osen nipul. So therefore, the aver is considered it's matame mishum aver menachai. Veino matame mishum aver nevela. But it's not tumat nevela. It's tumat aver menachai. Because mita osen nipul, which means that as soon as the animal died, it was as if this was totally detached beforehand, which meant it's aver menachai, but it's not part of the nevela. So we said then that we were going to have to get to what's the difference between saying it's matame aver menachai or matame nevela, because in the end, they're both avatumas, same kind of thing. My ika ben ever menachai la ever shela nevela, ika benayu basar ha poresh mimenu. Once you have this ever menachai, okay, you have this limb that's now detached from, right, the animal died, you now have this limb. If we call it nevela, then what? The flesh of that limb is forbidden, because nevela, we've always talked about, what's tumat nevela? It's on the flesh. But if we call this ever menachai, and you took some of the meat off of that aver, then that meat is not tame. Okay?
How could it be anything but nevela if the animal just died?
Because the aver was considered, that's the whole thing about mitao senipul. Since the aver, the limb was already detached, not fully, but almost all the way, when the animal dies, it makes it as if this was completely detached.
So we're talking about one of the, because it doesn't say, okay.
Yeah, we're talking about what?
An animal where there was a limb.
Yeah, yeah, well, that's the case in the Mishnah. That's why we're talking about the case in the Mishnah, where the limb was hanging off before the animal died. And then either the animal, right, while the animal's still alive, the whole thing was that part that's dangling is already matami tumat ochlin, if you had intent to give it to someone who would eat it, right, like a non-Jew. Okay? Again, even though it was forbidden for him, but that, okay, that's the first stage, where while the animal's still alive, what's the status of this? Is it matami tumat ochlin? Well, if you intended to give it to someone, it would be. Then we had the case, what if you then shech the animal? What's the status of this? And then we have a third case, what if the animal dies? And then it doesn't have tumat nevela, but it does have tumat aver menachai. So the difference is, basar poresh mimenu me'aver behema, de'ilu basar poresh me'aver menachai lo metame. Me'aver mena nevela mitame. Okay, so if the meat that separates from this aver menachai is not going to be metame aver menachai. But if the meat separates from nevela, well, that's tumat nevela. That's the main difference between them. Now we want to know what's the source that aver menachai is matame avatuma. We know it says in the Torah about a nevela, right? Chiyamu min abeima, right? And then hanogeya b'nevlata yitma. So how do we know that aver menachai is matame? Maikra, what's the pasuk? Amar Rabbi Yehuda Amar Rav, bechi yamut min abeima. Okay, this is the pasuk about the nevela. Shehi lachem lochla nogeh b'nivlata yitma ha'erev. What do they say? Min ha'beima. It could have just said v'chiyamud beima. Right? Why it say min ha'beima? To teach you something additional. Then they say, what do you mean? V'hami ba'alal l'ki'idach to Rav Yehuda Amar Rav. But Rav Yehuda Amar Rav already darshan that min ha'beima for something else. Da'amar Rav Yehuda Amar Rav. V'amri la b'manita tana. In other words, either Rav Yehuda said the name of Rav, or some people say it's a braita. V'chiyamud min ha'beima, miktsat be'ima mitama, miktsat be'ima eina mitama. It's dafka coming to limit. There are some animals that are mitame, and some animals that are not mitame. Ve'ezo zo, trefa shashachta. We learned this all, right? Remember, if an animal dies on its own, it's mitame to menevela. If you have an animal that's a trefa that you can't eat, right? You might have thought, well, trefa, nevela, it's all the same thing. It'll be mitame toma, toma nevela. No. If you take this trefa and it dies on its own, well, then it becomes a nevela. But if you have this trefa animal and you do a kosher shchita to it, you still can't eat it because it's a trefa, but it's not tame. Where do we learn that from? Min habema. Some memo, not all memo. So how can we learn this also? Inken lichto brahmana mi behema. If it wanted just to limit, it would have said from the behem, from a behema. My min habema, shmami na tarte. The fact that they use the word min and not just the letter mem, me behema, teaches you two things. Ihachi, if already we're saying it's including this aver menachai, then afilu basar nami. Why don't we say basar menachai is also included? Why do we distinguish aver and basar? Right? Flesh that comes off a live animal. So what do they answer? Lo salkadatach, ditanya. It doesn't make sense to say that if I take flesh off an animal, it's going to be mitame. Why is that? Very logical. And we're going to quote it from a braita. Yachol yehe basar poresh menachai tame. You might have thought flesh that comes off a live animal would be tame. Tamud lomar, bechi yamut min habehema. Ma mita she'ena osech halipin, Av kol she'enu aseh chalipin, divrei Rabbi Yossi Aglili. Doesn't say Aglili, but it is Rabbi Yossi Aglili. What does that mean? It has to be death. There's no death. If I cut some flesh off my skin, what's going to happen? It's going to regenerate. I'll have new skin, new flesh in a few days, depending on how old I am. But basically, since cutting off flesh, it'll just regrow. So that's not tummy. Tuma is has something to do with death often, right? So here, this is you took something off, a limb. That limb will never re-heal now that you removed it. So that's going to basically be tuma and not basar. That's Rabbi Yossi Aglili. Rabbi Akiva Omer, it says behema, ki amut mina behema. So what do we learn from that word? Ma behema gidim ba'atzamot, af kol gidim ba'atzamot. What does a behema have? It has sinews and bones. Therefore, only things that have sinew and bones. Now, meat doesn't have sinews or bones. So therefore, it's not going to be matami. Rabbi Omer, very similar to Rabbi Akiva, behema, ma behema basar gidim ba'atzamot. It has flesh, sinews, and bones. He adds the word flesh. Af kol basar gidim batzamot. It has to have flesh, sinews, and bones. So now the Gemara is going to try to figure out what the differences, practical differences between all these opinions. Ma yikaben Rebbe la Rabbi Akiva, which basically sound the same whether you say flesh or not. Yikaben ayu arkuva. The arkuva is the knee bone, which doesn't have, right, the bottom part of the knee, which doesn't have meat on it. So there you would have a bone, but it doesn't have flesh. So therefore, that would be the difference between Rabbi Akiva, who says, Bema gidim ba'atzamot, this has gidim and atzamot. So therefore, it would be, if you cut it off, and according to Rabbi, it wouldn't be Metame Eber Menachai, because it doesn't have any basar on it. Bein Rabbi Akiva or Rabbi Yossi Aglili, here's where you see it is Rabbi Yossi Aglili. Ma'ika, what's the difference between Rabbi Akiva and Rabbi Yossi Aglili? Ma'ika benayu, Amar Papa, Kulia veniv svatayim, Ika benayu. Okay, the kidneys and the upper part of the lip, which don't have sinews and bones in them, but, right, so therefore, according to Rabbi Akiva, they wouldn't be metame, because they don't have those criteria, but they don't regenerate. So because they don't regenerate, they would be metame, ever menachai, according to Rabbi Yossi Aglili. Tanya Nami Hachi. Now we're going to have the exact same braita by Shvatzim. So this is just review. Tanya Nami Gabe Shratzim Ki Agav. Now it also appears by Shratzim the exact same thing. Yachol Basar Poresh Mena Shratzim Yehe Tamit. Tamu Lamar Bimotam. Okay, they darshan not from B'chiyamut, but they darshan from Bimotam, because that's the pasuk by Sheretz. Eilat Mayim Lachem B'chol HaSheretz Kol HaNogea Behem Bimotam. So what does that mean? Ma Mita She'en Oseh Chalipin Af Kol She'en Oseh Chalipin Divrei Rabbi Yossi Aglili. Rabbi Akiva Omer Sheretz, Ma Sheretz Gidim Batzamot, Av Kol Gidim Batzamot. Rabbi Omer Sheretz, Ma Sheretz Basar Gidim Batzamot, Av Kol Basar Gidim Batzamot. Exact same thing. Again, they're going to say, Bein Rabbi the Rabbi Akiva, Ike Benayu Arkuva, Bein Rabbi Akiva the Rabbi Yosei Dli, the Ma'ika Benayu, Amar Papa Kulia Veniv Spatayim. Exact thing. Obviously, the Gemara is going to say, right, what do you need them both for? Right? Why do you need to have a Breita that talks about this one, a Breita that talks about Sheretz, a Breita that talks about the Behemah? They're saying the exact same thing. Utsricha, de'iash me'inam behema hainu tama deloma tamei mechayim mishum deloma tamei b'chadasha. There's a kula by behema that isn't by sheretz. By sheretz, what do we say? A sheretz and tamei, even a really small amount, like the size of a lentil. That means it's more chamor. That means maybe it'll be metamei basar, right? In other words, maybe even the basar haparesh mimenu. So if we only learned about behema, we might have thought since sheretz and metamei b'chadasha, maybe sheretz is also metame basar that comes off of it. Aval sheretz metame b'chadasha ema letame mechayim. Maybe you would think that the basar that comes off while it's still alive is going to be tame. Therefore, you have to say it by sheretz. V'yesh minan sheretz. So why don't you just say it by sheretz, and then we'll learn behema from sheretz, and sheretz is more chamor. No, because there's something that doesn't exist by sheretz. It does exist by behema. What's that? Mishum de lo metame b'masa. Sheretz is only metame b'maga, if you touch it. But if you carry it without actually touching the sheretz, carry it on a tray, not metame. So you might have thought, since it's not matami b'masa, lo matami mechayim. So if you just taught the sheretz case, you might have said the reason why a sheretz is a matami, the basar that comes off of a sheretz, is because it's not matami b'masa also. Aval behema, de matami b'masa, ematit ma mechayim, and therefore tzricha. You need both cases, because each one has unique things about it that are more chamor, that you would say, maybe because of that, right, you wouldn't be able to learn it from the other. Okay, that's it for today.